Welcome to MOFO Perspectives, a podcast by Morrison Forster, where we share the perspectives of our clients, colleagues, subject matter experts, and lawyers.
Welcome to the MOFO Life Sciences Podcast, where we talk to legal experts in the life sciences sector who have the insights and advice you need when your life sciences are on the line.
I'm Nate Mendel, a litigation partner at MOFO in Boston. I'm a former federal prosecutor and the former acting U.S. attorney for the District of Massachusetts.
I'm Kate Driscoll, a litigation partner in Morrison Forrester's Washington, D.C. office and also a former federal prosecutor.
At MOFO, we represent life sciences and healthcare clients when their life sciences are on the line. And this podcast features discussions with our expert colleagues and guests who provide their advice and learning relevant to life sciences. Today, our guest legal expert is our partner, Jim Krenn, whose practice is focused on emerging and established companies in the life sciences. Jim, why don't we start, as the saying goes, at the beginning with emerging life sciences companies, and you can talk a little bit about what matters most in those first stages of a company's development. Once we have that context from you, then we can talk about key steps companies can take to protect what is often their most valuable asset, intellectual property.
Thank you, Nate. Life science is a capital-intense business. Developing the next generation of drugs, devices, diagnostics, or digital health solutions takes significant people, activities, and other resources. And all of those resources cost money, and so capital raising is critical for nearly every such company. Part of the process of raising money is undergoing due diligence. Due diligence is the process in which investors and their advisors, including legal counsel, review the company to confirm it matches their expectation and there are no significant issues, including from a financial, technical, IP, capitalization, and legal perspective. That due diligence will focus on what investors care about most. In addition to confirming there are no capitalization issues, this will typically focus significantly on intellectual property. When we say intellectual property, we're not just talking about actual patents. For many companies, significant early stage value is in trade secrets. Nate and Kate will walk through what trade secrets are and issues around protecting them, but it's key that the company protects these valuable assets.
In the life sciences industry, trade secrets are often the crown jewels and lifeblood of the company. If your company has information that drives economic value from being secret, your company likely has trade secrets, provided that you take reasonable steps to protect them. Now, trade secrets come in a variety of flavors, from algorithms, techniques, and processes to pricing strategies, customer lists, and business plans. That's why, as Jim mentioned, protection of trade secrets is essential, as someone is almost certainly trying to steal them. With the advances in technology, thieves are developing even more sophisticated means for stealing trade secrets, and detection is more difficult. Now, of course, there are civil remedies available, including litigating theft of trade secrets, breach of contract, tortious interference, and patent claims. There's also the path of referring the matter to federal law enforcement to investigate and potentially prosecute. But I can tell you from my own experience, having prosecuted a significant criminal theft of trade secrets case while at the Department of Justice, that these cases take years to develop, often require the cooperation of the company to be successful, and result in significant expenses and strain on resources for both the government and the victim company. This is all a long way of saying that if someone steals your trade secrets, suing them or seeing them prosecuted means you're already far away from where you want to be. Prevention of the theft is key. Nate, you have experience both as a former prosecutor and now in private practice in cases involving trade secrets. What can life sciences companies do to prevent theft of their trade secrets?
Okay, immature data protection is a common source, maybe the most common source of trouble for younger companies. And I guess to put it in a positive frame, it's an area where good practices can really protect the company. Now, an immature system allows for the exfiltration of data, also known as people taking your stuff. And an immature system won't provide a good forensic record of data movement or of who moved data or files from one place to another. Those protections are not especially expensive to build into systems, but they do become very valuable if a company needs to track down suspicious activity or allegations of trade secret theft. Now, also, just in the regular course of business, it's important to be explicit when your work involves trade secrets. Simple things like marking slide decks and documents as confidential, requiring confidentiality agreements, and even the simple cyber steps like using unique passwords for each user, or maybe even two-factor authentication if the material is especially sensitive. From our practice, from our experience, we also know that, especially in younger companies, people with a lot of access to trade secrets come and go. Founders and leading scientists can switch out. And when people with access to trade secrets leave, it's important to stay current on the work they do when they set up shop somewhere else. As bad as it is to have your trade secrets stolen, you can limit the damage by taking action as soon as you see it happening. And monitoring employees after they leave is the first step in doing that effectively. We've seen in our practice, clients realize too late that their technology has not only been taken, but it's actually being used to secure IP rights. And that is probably the most painful way to learn that your trade secrets have been taken. All these steps that you and I have been talking about are not the typical fun or exciting parts of growing a business, but they do help protect the value that the company is building. It's a simple way to head off problems, and they're the kind of problems that are very difficult to work your way out of. Jim, we're talking about these problems as litigators. I'm curious what your perspective is on the happier side of life, the M&A side, where the optimists and the investors live. Are they tracking these kinds of issues?
Maybe we can start by talking about cybersecurity. Companies, particularly early stage companies, do not always see the value of focusing on cybersecurity, or it's just not close enough to the top of the list to get a lot of resources. However, investors are becoming more focused in this area, particularly for any company that touches a lot of data, whether protected health information or through AI. Maybe you could walk through a few ways that companies could distinguish themselves by showing good practices in this area to make sure they're checking the boxes in that diligence process.
Jim, you mentioned the two issues that get people's attention, protected health information and artificial intelligence. That's where attention to cybersecurity really is like a marketability question or a value proposition, because good practices there, it shows sound business judgment. And that can be a way to differentiate yourself as a more mature, competent management team, but also as a more stable and reliable platform that the investment is solid, not going to be subject to some excessive cyber risk. And avoiding breaches that lead to data privacy infractions, notice requirements, maybe even lawsuits, has a special importance for the life sciences industry. Whether you're talking about losing trade secrets or patient health information, either way.
It's always interesting to get the litigator's perspective on the issue. As we talk more broadly about compliance, I can say in my experience that founders and early stage companies are not always compliance focused. They're focused on making sure that technology actually works or the science gets developed. As a result, they dedicate resources to developing the science and technology rather than other matters, under the logic that if the science and technology doesn't work, there's no company. However, as a key part of diligence for life science companies, it can be compliance, particularly in certain areas of life sciences. It's potentially a significant source of present or future downside risk that investors want to take a look at. Younger life science companies face a real challenge in providing adequate compliance when teams are small, the energy is going into getting the company off the ground, and compliance is often viewed as a cost center with a risk that, while out there, may seem insignificant at the time or too far in the future.
No matter the size, life sciences and healthcare companies are highly regulated and closely scrutinized by enforcers. This is why compliance programs are key. Of course, the compliance infrastructure can be scaled to suit the enterprise. If the company is a startup, even a modest compliance team can bring important benefits and mitigate risk of enforcement scrutiny. Enforcer expectations increase as companies grow and scale. So for larger organizations, it's expected that significant resources and expertise will be expended to develop and monitor a compliance program that can address the breadth and complexity of compliance challenges they are facing. Having a compliance program in place for any size life sciences company also helps reduce the risk of whistleblower complaints. Nate and I have seen time and again unhappy, likely former employees, who had voiced compliance concerns while at the company, but felt that they were not adequately addressed. There's a mechanism in which they can file what's called a QITAM suit, which allows private citizens to bring a lawsuit on behalf of the United States alleging fraud on the government. The government may choose to intervene as well. Whistleblowers are a core resource for enforcers to bring civil and criminal cases in the life sciences sector, and there are significant financial incentives to encourage them to do so. I will add that strong compliance adds to marketability. And Jim, for many of your clients, the ultimate goal is marketability so that they can potentially go public. Can you share with the audience the risks and best practices for life sciences companies who are looking to go public?
I'd be happy to. And Kate, as you mentioned, compliance issues often scale as a company scales. And notably, going public is a key goal for many of my life science clients. It provides companies access to capital and validation, among other positive attributes. But it brings with it a new set of challenges, such as insider trading. Nate, I know you're seeing a number of issues in this area.
The reason you and I are talking about insider trading in this context is that it's really a hot issue for enforcers, and they are turning their eye increasingly toward the life sciences. Insider trading itself is not new, but the sizable valuations, the high-profile corporate activity in life sciences, that is new, and that's drawing a lot of scrutiny. We know from our experience that when suspicious trades happen and investigators start asking questions, the clients who can say that they absolutely never disclosed material non-public information, period, are way ahead of clients who find themselves explaining the disclosures that they did make and trying to justify them as being not problematic. And I know we've counseled clients, and I think quite effectively, that having the discipline to maintain the required confidentiality is very persuasive and provides important protection to our clients, especially around this insider trading question. We've seen many times that there's great power in this context in being able to say simply, I never disclosed that to anyone, period.
Not only has healthcare caught the eye of securities enforcers, it has also caught the eye of a very different group, cyber criminals. We are seeing a consistent trend as recently as the FBI's report on the subject issued this month that ransomware is a prevalent and growing threat in the life sciences industry. This should be really no surprise as the stakes are very high and can directly impact patient care and safety. That is a compelling reality when confronted with a ransomware demand. Refusing to pay the ransom is usually not a risk that life sciences companies can afford to make. There are fundamental steps that companies should take to protect themselves against ransomware attacks. System hardening is one of them. It reduces vulnerability in the IT infrastructure and operating system. Backing up your systems is another one. If ransomware affects your system, you can restore it to its previous state with the backup so that you can continue operating and delivering life-saving care even when faced with a ransomware threat. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, testing your policies with tabletop exercises. It's akin to a dress rehearsal that simulates a real-world attack, allowing companies to identify and address key vulnerabilities.
In my practice, the point in which I see the most focus on compliance, data security, cybersecurity, all the topics we've been discussing here today, is when clients go to sell their companies. When a company's in the process of selling itself, it faces significantly amped up due diligence, typically more scrutiny than when taking on an investment. And that's because the acquirer is stepping into the company's shoes. That means they're inheriting the company's prior compliance work, data security practices, and trade secret protections. The acquirer in this process will typically throw a whole team at this, as they often have whole departments that just focus on these matters if they're a large acquirer. Depending on the size and stage, the target company may just have a small number maybe just one person, or even one person who focuses on these issues as a small part of their job. And so it's key to be prepared in advance and organized. You don't want the acquirer discovering a skeleton in your closet. That can lead to deal risk, deal term or value changes, and significantly more scrutiny on all parts of the business that just makes the process that much more painful. Nate, maybe you could walk through a few steps that companies can do to really streamline this.
That really intense diligence that you're talking about at the sale of the company, that's where the steps that we've been talking about today really pay off. Attention to cybersecurity, protecting your trade secrets, protecting patient data. Those all signal a mature and competent management team, and just their existence is reassuring to the acquirer. It's important, and I think Kate was making this point, it's important to note that these steps don't have to be expensive. They can be scaled to suit the entity, the size of the enterprise, or the company. But having them is very important, because the risk is real. The issues do come into play, particularly in a highly regulated industry like healthcare or the life sciences. And having those processes in place is critical. It helps you keep a lid on your patient data, your trade secrets. It protects your work and your company while you're growing. And then it gives you a great story to tell when you're talking to an acquirer. So Jim, thank you for talking with us today about these key steps to take. It was very interesting to hear some of your points from your area of practice. I appreciate you coming on.
It was my pleasure to join. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining today's episode of When Your Life Sciences Are on the Line. We look forward to having you join us for future episodes.
Please make sure to subscribe to the MOFO Perspectives podcast so you don't miss an episode. If you have any questions about what you heard today or would like more information on this topic, please visit mofo.com/podcasts. Again, that's mofo, M-O-F-O.com/podcasts.